You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, broadcasting from the Cultural District here in Fairfield on this sunny day. So that helps with our solar-powered
initiative.
One of the few, if not only, solar-powered community radio stations in the country.
Wow, great.
And I'm your host, Monica Hadley, with Writers' Voices, and my co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. And it's a beautiful day. The sun is shining. Yeah, there's a lot of snow piles, but it'll be melting here one of these days.
And this is the first show you and I have done together in quite a while, isn't it?
I know. Yeah.
I was gone for 4 weeks, and Caroline and Shemaine filled in for me while I was gone. And then since I've been back, I did a show with a guest host, and then you and Shemaine did it again last week.
Yeah.
It's good to be back. It's good to be back together.
Good to be back together. Yes, yes.
I was telling somebody recently about how the show got started and why it got started, and they didn't realize that a large part of the reason I'm doing this is because Caroline, my mother, has a 30-year history as a radio host. And
It does go back a long ways, doesn't it?
It's actually more than 35 years probably by now.
Yeah. Well, not constantly
more.
All that time, but, you know, I've been at the radio station in Burlington for 10 years. I can't believe that.
Yeah, when we first moved to Fairfield in 1972, Mom got a job at the local radio station, did a daily talk show.
Yeah.
Yeah, for quite a number of years.
7 years.
And so I think what you were doing during that time fits real well with the topic of our interview today.
Yeah, I think it does.
You were working for good, making a difference while making a living.
And having fun at the same time.
Our guest today is Jeff Klein, the author of Working for Good. Jeff is the CEO and activator of Working for Good. He produces collaborative, multi-sector cause alliance marketing programs that drive social and environmental change while addressing the business objectives of alliance partners. Jeff also co-founded Conscious Capitalism, Inc. with John Mackey, CEO of Whole Foods Market. Jeff Klein was one of the driving forces behind Private Music, a record company sold to BMG in 1996, the career of musician Yanni, the spinning fitness program, Seeds of Change, the Qi Running Fitness Program, Flow, the nonprofit organization that gave rise to Conscious Capitalism, Accelerating Women Entrepreneurs, and Peace Through Commerce.
Wow.
So, Jeff, when do you sleep?
Yeah.
Well, don't ask that question because I don't really sleep that much.
I believe it.
Welcome to Writers' Voices, Jeff.
Oh, delighted to be here. And I have to say, I heard Carolyn say in the background there, and having fun at the same time. And absolutely. I just wanted to highlight that, Carolyn, because I don't know if it was fully heard. That is essential.
Yes, so. It is. Absolutely. And that's one of the joys of living a full life, is having fun what you're doing. And let's face it, not everybody can. But those of us who can.
Not everybody does, but I think everybody can.
Well, if I had to work in a factory and piecemeal every day, I don't think I could.
it might be hard, though.
It would be hard,
there are
yeah.
ways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jeff, what drew you to the concept of conscious capitalism?
Well, I was drawn to what conscious capitalism represents probably 30 years before I ever heard the term conscious capitalism, and probably 20-some years before that term ever arose. I felt called to make a difference through my work, and I recognized that business, had tremendous power in general, and that marketing channels were the channels that most people received most of their information from. So I said, well, if I care to make a difference and, addressing social and environmental issues, then I need to understand business and marketing, and I need to, work with them or through them to make a difference. So that's really the it's a calling and a curiosity in a sense.
So you came to this from a marketing background?
Well, I did. You'd say marketing and business development. I was never trained in any of those, but I've started and built you know, Private Music, Yanni, Spinning, She Running, Seeds of Change, and, you know, various companies and projects and products. And marketing was a big part, but building organizations is another part.
Now, what is Spinning, that bicycle thing?
Yes, it's the bicycle thing. So, and it was very different at the very beginning. It wasn't so hard, you know, push, push, push. It had much more a variety. And some of it was restorative and regenerative, and some of it was even spiritual. It became very physical and kind of hard driving. But that's not all that it is, or not all that it was.
Well, how were you involved in that at the very beginning? I'm really curious.
Yeah, I met Johnny G, who was the founder of it, when he had maybe 10, 20 students in Santa Monica. I was one of them. And I was managing Yanni at the time, and I just loved the idea, and I loved the workout, and became friends with him and ended up, you know, building the marketing platform, the language and logo, and got him into the top gym in L.A. Just helped, you know, move it along. And then I ended up leaving. I won't go into why, I ended up leaving before it took off, but I helped build the, you know, kind of the marketing and business platform that it took off from.
I know my daughter does a spin class down in Dallas, and there's also an entrepreneur here who has started a spin studio here in Fairfield, in our little town of 10,000. So
yeah, it's great.
From that tiny seed, it has really grown.
It has, because there's something about it that works, right?
It must. It must.
Yeah, well.
Well, tell us a little bit about why you decided to write this book. Is this your first published book?
Yeah, this is my first published book. And about 12 years ago, after a series of very rich, deep experiences, you know, from Private Music and Yanni to Spinning and Siege of Change, and then a project that I was working on in Mexico, Southern Baja, building a retreat center, all of them, you know, had gold and all of them had coal. You know, some things were just magnificent, some things were really painful. And it was a time when it was right before I had, daughter, who's now 11 and a half, and I was reflecting on, okay, what has this journey been about? You know, all these different, building all these different businesses and projects, and what is it that I was really looking to accomplish, and what have I learned, and what have I done, what have I not done? And I called the book Building a Business with Soul at the time, because that was my intention, and people involved in the companies that I would work with would invariably, almost every time I did something, they'd say, "You're the soul of this company." And I don't presume, I'm not the soul of the company, but I might have had a connection to the soul of the company and reflected it in some way. And so I worked on this book, and when I was done, you know, 100 some pages, whatever, I realized that it wasn't time. I needed more experience. I needed to take my intentions and deeper and really, really understand what it is that I was working towards. And 2 years ago, January or February, I was, you know, building Flow with Conscious Capitalism and Peace Through Commerce and Accelerating Women Entrepreneurs and all that. And it occurred to me one day, it's time for me to write my book. And I'd had people over the years, you should write a book. And I just realized it was time. I had cultivated the skills, the insight, and the experience that I had something meaningful to share, and so I went at it.
You know, I find that really interesting, that concept of when the time was right, then the task became much easier for you and much more fulfilling for you, I assume. And
yeah, I have to say, the process of writing the book was one of the richest, most deeply integrative experiences of my life, probably the most integrative, where I deepened everything that I'd ever intended to learn or cultivate, went deeper or higher, you know, and I was able to synthesize an overall, you know, perspective and understanding and kind of system, as it were, which is reflected in the book. It was incredible. And now taking it out and talking to people like you about it continues to deepen my understanding and my embodiment of these skills of working for good and the whole kind of mindset. So it's amazing. Well, it's an amazing process.
Well, there's an old saying that you learn by teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I, well, Yes, I would say that's true.
Yeah. And you know, you wrote this, and I know you read it over and over and over when you were writing and so forth. But still, you know, new ideas can come from the words that you've already written, and as you look at them.
And the other thing I have to say is that I wrote the book while I was fully engaged in working. I did not like take a break and took 2 weeks. You know, the last 2 weeks to write, you know, a bunch of words. But I was working full days every day, which was great because I got to practice what I was writing about. And, and then when I'm writing, reflect on the experiences of the day or the week or the month or the process that we're in. And it very, very rich, that writing, you know, reflecting writing while you're doing is very powerful. Challenging just because of the time thing, but very rich.
Do you miss that now that the book is finished?
No, because I still write all the time. I do at least I do 2 blog posts a week, and I reflect, you know, kind of constantly, and I work to refine my practice constantly. I have an amazing team of partner collaborators and Working for Good, and we live it. So we're constantly checking in with each other and deepening our process together, supporting each other as well as deepening our collaboration. So it's a living practice, and there's no missing anything. There's no missing it. Maybe I'll write another book someday, maybe not. but the benefit that the book provided, I'm getting in other ways.
Where can listeners read your blog posts?
They can get them at workingforgood.com. I think, and if they go to workingforgood.com, they'll see blog. Just click on blog or just /blog. And then I also have a Facebook page, and I post them there as well.
Great. It sure is. Marketing has certainly been changed by the internet, hasn't it?
It sure has.
And publishing too.
Yeah, publishing is being changed by the internet and.
Yeah, the way we communicate, right?
The way we
communicate as individuals and also as, you know, businesses is changed by the internet in very exciting ways, I think.
Well, to hear some people tell it, you know, this book of yours that I'm holding in my hand may be one of the last of its kind.
Well, it may be. I think it's going to be a little while before there are no more books. People still like to hold the physical thing, and you know, the Kindle and the new iPad and all that. You know, I think they'll cut away at it a lot, but I think there's going to be people that still want to hold paper, words on paper, for a while.
I think maybe forever.
Yeah, I do too.
I
think so too.
Well, Jeff, how do you define a conscious business?
Well, and when you say how do I define it, I'm going to represent the definition that we're using in the Conscious Capitalism Inc. and Conscious Capitalism Alliance with some of my own. I mean, the first thing, what's reflected by the word conscious is. Oh, and there's awareness, right? It's not just following some blind model, or blind, into purpose, which is, okay, we're going to make money. That's the purpose of business. We don't have to think about anything else. Boom, blinders on, right? In conscious capitalism, there are no blinders, or you continually look to see what are the blinders and open your eyes wider and wider. So that's my own definition, just as a starting point. But the definition that we use in the whole conscious capitalism ecosystem is it is based on 3 different principles or pillars. The first one is purpose, recognizing that in addition, right, to generating a profit, business exists for something else, and whether it's, making widgets or, providing a service, you're doing something. Your purpose is to deliver some value, some product or service to society. Secondly, and somewhat related to this, is that rather than a business being a tube, right, where you put inputs in and profits come out, and that your whole focus is the shareholders, recognizing that a business exists as an ecosystem, right, as an ecosystem of interrelated, interdependent stakeholders, So your customers, your employees or team members, whatever you call them, your vendors, your investors, the communities you do business in, that they all have a stake in the business, and that the way to create a healthy, flourishing, resilient business is to create value very purposefully for all of the stakeholders, again, rather than just focusing on the shareholders. And then the third one, and actually I'll stop here for a second, and part of that process is cultivating a conscious culture, right? It's like the culture is the soil or the water that this ecosystem, you know, grows from. And then the third one is conscious leadership. It's leaders that recognize that the business exists for a purpose beyond just profit, and that it exists as an ecosystem, and that the role of the leader is to serve, you know, is to serve the purpose and serve the ecosystem, and recognizing that as part of the ecosystem, if the ecosystem flourishes, so will you, rather than looking at it as what's in it for me, and, you know, I got to make as much money as I can, and it's all about me. So those are the three kind of principles underlying a conscious business model.
Well, it sounds like they seem very obvious in a way.
It's true. It's beautifully said. And absolutely true. Unfortunately, it's not the way most people see business.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been in business myself my entire adult life, and have a wide range of business experiences, because one of my businesses is an accounting business that services other small businesses. And so, you know, the idea of somebody going into business without a purpose beyond just making money, it doesn't even make sense to me.
Let's say 99.99% of people that go into business, of course they have a purpose, you know?
Yes.
And what happens is, you know, especially as you get a public company and larger company, is that the focus becomes on the money, and they forget that they have a purpose, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, and that's, you know, part of the problem, of course, is how our stock market works.
That's right.
The short-term perspective of many, if not most, investors, and that that you live or die by this quarter's profits in the market. How would you address that? What would you do to change that?
Well, you know, in some respects, there are a growing body of investors and investment community that is paying attention to this. The Aspen Institute has convened people like Warren Buffett and major financial institutions who are really looking at the implications of the short-termism and the positive implications both for society and for investors in a longer-term perspective. So there's a movement within, you know, the investment and business community. Also, you know, John Mackey has suggested change the tax structure, you know, have a really high tax on short-term capital gains, and as you go out farther, the tax goes lower and lower. I mean, that's a way of using, you know, the system.
Right.
System rules to do it. So there are various ways. And also, companies are finding that, you know, they do better over time if they have a longer-term perspective. Again, when you're in the public markets, you know, people actually, and this is done more than we care to, you know, think to know, is where investors will actually kill companies for a financial return. I mean, literally, you know, kill a company because they can win by doing so.
Mm-hmm.
That's got to be transparent. It's got to be understood and not incentivized, right? Really disincentivized. Those are a few things.
Yeah. Now, some of your key concepts in Working for Good are awareness, embodiment, connection, collaboration, and integration. And in fact, that's sort of the overarching structure of the book, is describing those concepts. Do you want to give us a kind of a brief overview of what you mean by these terms?
Certainly. I mean, in the process of writing the book, these emerged to me as the main themes of what I focus on and what I've cultivated over the last 30 years. And then what I've observed in others as kind of keys to success. And, you know, briefly, awareness is awareness, right? It's awareness of ourselves. You know, what are we seeing? What are we not seeing? What is our way of being in the context of our work? What is our perspective? What is our effect on others? And what is the effect of others on us? How do we engage with others? How do we work with groups? What is the effect of groups on us and vice versa? Right? Do we get into trance or can we maintain our, you know, kind of conscious awareness and stand up to the, you know, to a mob or a group? And cultivating an ongoing sense of awareness and deepening and broadening awareness is essential to everything else. For me, it's the mother of all skills and the most important for building a conscious business, for making a difference.
It's the keystone.
Then embodiment, you know, the key, you know, you can have all the awareness in the world, but if you don't integrate it and carry it in your body, it doesn't really matter, at least not to me. And business is about doing things, right? People, it's a business or a company, it's a group of people who come together and say, you know, we're going to do this together. And so there's directionality, there's intention, there's principles that guide the way you do things, there's practices that cultivate, you know, and the embodiment of those principles. All of that is about embodiment. Then connection, what happens, you come with awareness, you embody it, you take it forward, and guess what? You come across others, right? Individuals mm-hmm. within your company or within your ecosystem, as well as, you know, more broadly, and you've got to deal with people if you're in business. And connection is that process of opening to others and hearing them deeply, understanding how to engage in dialogue, and starting to cultivate the ground for collaboration and co-creation. Collaboration, to work together, right? You open to the skills of connecting with others, then you can actually work together from a really deep place. And the integration piece is recognizing that all of the time we have new understandings, new insights, things that we didn't understand or see before. We've got to really bring them in and make them part of who we are so that the cycle continues and we have a new awareness as we move forward. The other piece about integration is there's always parts that are left, you know, unaddressed, call it shadows or holes. And as we deepen our understanding and as we engage with others and collaborate, we get glimpses of those things that we don't recognize in ourselves and in our teams and in our systems. We have an opportunity to go, oh, there's an edge. There's something else we can work on that will make us more whole, more conscious, more effective in the world. And you bring your awareness, et cetera, to that. So that's, in a nutshell,
it's kind of a circular process, then, instead of just a linear one.
Yeah, there's an image in the book, and I don't remember what page offhand, I'll find it, which is kind of a mandala that came to me, where there are these circles, they're actually called parases, for each one of them, and they overlap and they make a star. And so there's a progression from awareness to embodiment, connection, collaboration, integration, but they all touch each other and they all feed each other. So it's not a linear progression, but there's definitely a connection and a circular, as you said, a circular movement between all of them.
Cool.
And it's true. I know it because I live it. I see it every day, you know, as I'm living it.
How many different, like, businesses are you involved with now or organizations? It sounds like quite a few.
Well, you know, I've actually streamlined it and focused it, and almost everything that I'm doing is in the context of the business called Working for Good, but we're working with many different companies and projects and, you know, causes in that context, and they will be growing over time. So I'm doing, you know, my work is focused in Working for Good, yet I'm on the board of Conscious Capitalism, Inc., and we've been asked to produce the next Catalyzing Conscious Capitalism Summit. We're doing some research on an awareness technology that we may help build a business around. I'm working with One Coconut Water health education campaign to educate health practitioners, mothers, and others about the health benefits of coconut water. And then we're developing a Working for Good food program, which includes campaigns focused on kids and food, another focused on access to high-quality, healthy food for low-income people, another one focused on regenerating soil. So each one of these ends up being a whole program in itself with companies and nonprofits and, in some cases, government agencies involved. So involved in touching lots of different organizations.
Well, this thing with food and so forth, that's so so basic. I mean, you'd think we would always think of that first, but we don't.
No, we don't. As a matter of fact, we built a very toxic food system.
Yes.
No, and fortunately, there are quite a few people and organizations doing really great work to open our eyes and move the needle. And we're catalyzing and facilitating a collaboration between a whole bunch of different people and organizations to really raise this one up the flagpole.
I was just reading some articles about you remember the peanut contamination thing and the tomatoes and jalapeno pepper contamination and the ground beef. I mean, we're really at risk all the time. We have to be more more aggressive in, you know, taking care of our things that we eat.
And of course, eating more local food and growing our own, that's a very important cause in this part of the country. A lot of people are very involved in that. And
we'll probably come visit you.
Oh, good.
Good. Oh, that would be wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Fairfield, all of your, you would find a lot of like-minded people here.
Yes, you would.
There's no doubt about it. The Sustainable Living Program out at Maharishi University of Management is strong and growing, and there's a lot of work being done towards sustainability for our whole town, trying to become energy self-sufficient. And so our solar-powered radio station is just one little part of that. So you're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Jeff Klein, the author of Working for Good, Making a Difference While Making a Living. Jeff, tell us a little bit about what Cause Alliance Marketing is and how that...
Cause Alliance Marketing is what we're doing through Working for Good. I've been developing this for 10 years, started with a partner in the early part of the 2000s, and then a few years later went off on my own. Cause Alliance Marketing, as the words reflect, is addressing social issues through alliances, which means collaborations between companies, nonprofits, government agencies, etc. And the marketing piece has two meanings. One is that you're marketing for the cause. And by marketing, I mean you're communicating through various channels to various constituencies with the intention of engaging them in relationship, right? Marketing is not about brainwashing. Marketing is a process of communicating to cultivate relationship, right? So you're doing that for the cause, and at the same time, in connection with what they're doing in the cause campaign, the companies, the nonprofits, whoever else is involved, also gets a marketing benefit because they are cultivating relationships and they are communicating about themselves and with these, you know, constituencies. So it's a marketing on two levels. That's what a Cause Alliance marketing campaign is.
Now, can you give us an example of one?
Sure. We can use the example of food. We're in the process of building this one, but it's easy to talk about. There's a nonprofit called Allergy Kids, allergykids.com, a woman named Robin O'Brien, who wrote a book called The Unhealthy Truth, which looks at the implications for GMOs and our kind of high-tech food system in general on kids, allergies, autism, and other health-related issues.
I believe she's our guest next week.
Oh, you're talking to Robin?
I think so, yeah. I know we have her on the schedule, and I think it's next week.
She is awesome.
Yeah. Great.
Absolutely awesome. And another nonprofit that we're working with in the same context is called Healthy Child, Healthy World. I think the URL is healthychild.org. another fantastic organization. Robin's involved with them. And so we're together with Robin and Allergy Kids, Healthy Child, Healthy World, various companies whose names are not to be announced yet because we haven't finalized anything. We're going to do a video, you know, media, events, you know, paid media. When I say media, we're going to produce media like videos, but we'll also work with magazines and others, events, etc., to spread the word and educate moms and others about the issue and engage them in the campaign, whether it's to spread the word, make contributions, whatever we can do to essentially build a movement to change the food system. That's an example of a program. And we'll have celebrities involved. Robin is, you know, is or will become one, though a very substantial being she is. So, you know, celebrities, talent like Robin, organizations like Allergy Kids with companies. You can imagine companies in the natural product space, both retailers and, you know, manufacturers of products. So that's an example. And it's an ongoing thing. And, again, you use the media channels. You use the Internet. You use, you know, broadcast media. You use print media. You use events. You tie into community organizations with an ongoing campaign of education and engagement, right? Here's some information. Come on in. Here's how you can participate. Does that help you?
Yes, that's great. That's great. Let's talk a little bit more about how, you know, when you were writing the book, you said you started originally 12 years ago, put it aside when you realized you weren't quite ready to write it, and then you started again, what, a couple of years ago?
Well, I guess, it came out last September. I handed in, yeah, so 2 years ago right now is when I started.
Okay, so, and you were working full-time.
Yes, and I'm a full-time single dad, by the way. I've been literally 100% of the time. My daughter's now 11 and a half, and I've been a full-time single dad for 3 years.
Wow. And so you were writing late at night, I assume?
Well, actually, I didn't start the writing 2 years ago. I realized that I needed to do the book. What happened is I was negotiating with Tammy Simon of Sounds True for a CD audio project with John Mackey on conscious capitalism called Passion and Purpose. And when we were done with our negotiations, I said, oh, by the way, Tammy, I'm writing a book. She says, oh, really? What's it called? I said, Working for Good. She said, I want to see it. So I sent her a one-page overview, and she said, I want it.
Wow. Okay, so you had no trouble finding a publisher whatsoever.
No, I didn't have any trouble. It was right timing, right? What can I say?
Absolutely.
It was. Yeah.
Wow. So you had written a lot of this material over the years?
No, I actually wrote the whole book, but essentially between June and December, and I wrote most of it, November, December, and the actual writing was the last 2 weeks of the year.
Of course.
I have to admit, I had to figure out what to do with my daughter. I knew that I would need a Christmas break to write the book because I was just too busy. I was producing two conferences and running this organization. And so I needed to be somewhere where my daughter would just have fun. I'd be able to be with her in a good way, yet I could write. So I'd heard about Club Med. And we went to a Club Med in Cancun. She had the best time. She didn't care if she saw me all day. You know, we had meals together. I would come out a few times and be in the ocean with her. And I spent the rest of the time writing the book.
Oh, wow. Now, that's the way to do it. That's fantastic. Now, as you were writing, were you working with an editor on and on as you went, or did you get the whole thing?
Well, I was blessed. I mean, again, you know, you have these angels as you go along, but it Sounds True had an editor-in-chief, the main book editor, who has subsequently left because she decided that she needed to be on her own, not because there's an issue with Sounds True. She still works with them, named Kelly Notaris. And Kelly, what happened is September 21st, I think, you know, I handed her 15,000 or 20,000 words. And about 3 weeks later, I got it back, right? And it was ripped to shreds.
Ooh.
I mean, she just went, you know, what are you doing? You're writing the book that you think you're supposed to write, and if I see one more bulleted list, I'm going to scream. In between all of that, all the stuff that she didn't identified my voice and my authentic content. And she said, Jeff, forget about all these other things that you think you need to do. Just be yourself. And then a month later, I handed her 20,000 words. She said, I would be proud to publish this book.
Wow.
So she gave me the gift of, helping me find my voice as a writer and then it was easy.
Well, Jeff, it really sounds like everything came together just in sync so well to produce this book.
Well, yeah, thank you for recognizing that.
It's really, well, back to what you originally said about, when the time was right, and I was talking with someone this week at lunch who was asking me some advice about how to make decisions in a business, because I've built several businesses, and I said, well, the thing is that when the time's right, the decision becomes obvious.
Yeah, very well said.
And until then, it's a strain and a struggle, and you don't know, and it just seems overwhelming. And then at some point, you know.
Right. You know, that's a sense that's not really cultivated. And I talk about,
you
intuition
do.
And
yes.
felt sense. And you're talking to it very well here. We don't. Our culture does not really cultivate that sensibility, and it's so powerful.
You think you should back off a little bit then and be patient, or?
So, if I try and force a decision, and also sometimes a task in business, if something that I know that I need to do, but if I try and do it before I'm ready, it's hard. And if I just back off and wait until I feel ready to do it, it becomes easy.
Hmm.
And when you feel ready, do you also mean when you sense that the context is ready as well, right?
Yes.
That's both. It's you're ready to make the move, but you're really sensing the whole space and going, it's now time for this to happen.
We can plant
the seed now, it'll grow.
Right, exactly. And things sometimes, in most of my business I'm in a partnership in several businesses, and sometimes my partners will want to do something that I'm resistant to at one time, and bless them, they all totally respect my intuition about these things, and then at another point in time, I'll say, yes, now's the time to do this, and things work out, it's...
So, Monica, that's a really beautiful point, and I just want to kind of highlight that. And yesterday, the Working for Good team, Susan Hollingshead, Belko Farina, Chris Robb, and I had a meeting for several hours, and we were working on a pricing issue relating to our business model, and it was really interesting because at one point, Susan was very uncomfortable. She goes, I don't understand. And I'm like, I went through it really simply and really straight. She's still scratching her head. And then she said, forget it, I'll figure it. I said, no. We have to understand each other and what this is about. And then we got to this recognition, and Chris went, I feel uncomfortable about this. And we stayed with it, and we realized by staying with that uncomfortableness, that not understanding, that sense of something's not right, that two of us had, even though we could have gone on, we had a revelation happen, right?
Wow.
A revelation and a profound shift in our, in our relationship to clients, as it were. And it's hearing that and trusting that if there's a disturbance, if there's a voice that's going, something's not right, don't leave it. Stay there, right?
Stay there and
honor it. And whether it wants to be heard now or, as you said, in some cases, just not now, I'll know what right timing is.
Right.
It's beautiful.
Wow. Well, Jeff, why don't you read a passage from Working for Good?
Oh, well, thank you. And we're probably close to time here, right?
Yeah, we've got about 15 minutes left, so.
Yeah, you know what I think I'll do? I mean, I can either read from the beginning or the end.
Well, why don't you do a little of each?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to read this quotation from Khalil Gibran at the beginning of the book, if I may, just because it's so
course.
Beautiful and really to kind of celebrate work. And it goes like this. Always, you have been told that work is a curse and labor a misfortune. But I say to you that when you work, you fulfill a part of Earth's furthest that dream was born. Mm-hmm. And in keeping yourself with labor, you're in truth loving life. Mm-hmm. And to love life through labor is to be intimate with life's inmost secret.
Wow. Thank you. I do want to point out that you have wonderful quotes, very relevant quotes interspersed throughout this book.
Yes,
and it must have
yes.
been really fun finding those and choosing those.
I've been collecting quotes for years.
That's what I do.
and I did find many new gems as I did this, because I the ones I had just weren't quite right? But yeah, and I've had quite a few comments. There's this one guy, friend, kind of, who I don't know if he's even read the book, but he carries it with him, and he goes to the quotes frequently, because they, touch something and support something in him. I'm going to read a little bit from the beginning, and then I'll go to the end, as you suggested. I think that's a good, even if it's just the first page.
Great, okay.
And then I open the next page, which is the preface, also starts with a brief quote from Khalil Gibran, which is, "Work is love made visible." Right? So the preface begins, "You're not going to believe this, but my dad actually likes to work." I recently overheard my 10-year-old, and she was 10 at the time, my 10-year-old daughter, Meryl Faye, say to a friend. We were driving in the car, and she was telling a friend this. "She's right. I love to work. Always have. I believe it provides a great sense of purpose and meaning, cultivates our capacity to serve, drives personal growth, stimulates creativity, and holds the key to collective evolution and transformation. For the past 3 decades, I have joyfully pursued my passion and calling to discover and explore ways to become ever more human and fully present in the context of my work, to realize my highest potential, to make the most substantial impact for the greatest good, and to support others in doing the same. While this book is not autobiographical, it is personal, because I develop the insights I share here through my own experience of working for good. The working for good approach emerged as I cultivated the skills and practices I will describe and apply them in my own life. This approach has also been informed by my observation of and collaboration with others who have cultivated and applied some or all of these and related skills and practices." I will now move to... let's see here. "Throughout my career, I have immersed myself in many idealistic ventures with great vision and high aspirations for serving humanity and making the world a better place. All of them have made meaningful contributions, and some continue to do so. And in some ways, all have fallen short of their aspirations. The falling short inspires me to strive to fulfill higher level of realization of the idea of working for good. And higher aspirations and steadfast pursuit generate great meaning and a powerful sense of purpose. When informed by the experience of repeatedly falling down, then successfully getting back up, and by the world at first saying, 'Are you crazy?' and then beginning to say things like, 'Oh, this is a good idea, and let's see what we can do,' this aspiration and pursuit start to manifest a new, truly motivating reality." So, and I'm not reading here now, I don't know about you, but I've fallen many times, always get back up, and I was on what is called, what's referred to as the bleeding edge for a very long time. I don't feel that way anymore, far from it. And I also find, amazing, amazing universe of like-minded spirits and souls and workers, people
yes.
are really doing it out there.
Yes.
And this is a time of really finding each other and recognizing that we've all, been out there. John Mackey uses the metaphor of, cutting through the jungle with a machete. Whatever the metaphor, if that's the metaphor, well, now we've come to a clearing and we find each other. We're all, kind of cutting toward the same place, and now we're in this beautiful clearing. It's like, oh, wow, let's have a party, Let's cut together, right?
Right, right.
So I'll now go to the end of the book, and the last chapter is called Return. And the quotation I use to open it is T.S. Eliot, which goes, "We must not cease from exploration, and the end of all our exploring will be to arrive where we began and to know the place for the first time." Mm. And I'll read a little bit here. In his extensive studies of the mythologies of the cultures of the world, Joseph Campbell discovered and described the archetypal hero's journey. The journey begins with the call, when the hero heeds the call to pursue a compelling purpose. He, or she, leaves the familiar world he knows to venture into the unknown, risking comfort, safety, social standing, essentially everything in the process. And in the next stage of the journey, descent, the hero descends into the underworld. Here he is forced to let go of what he knew and did in the past. Here also he encounters naysayers and other obstacles to his journey. In the next stage, travels through the underworld, he faces his greatest fears, is tempted by forces that will pull him off his pursuit of his purpose, and finally meets allies who bestow upon him the powerful tools he needs to support him through the journey. Ultimately, after surviving a symbolic death in order to find what he was looking for on the journey, the hero reemerges in the final stage, return. Though the hero wants to enjoy the fruits of his labor and bask in the warm light of success, the power of his purpose and his commitment to his community lead him back to the normal, everyday world he once inhabited. However, he returns transformed, bringing with him the gifts he picked up on his journey to share with the rest of humanity, gifts of experience, insight, wisdom, and the will to serve others and spread love and joy. This return is not a turning back, but a moving through the challenges, obstacles, and lessons of the journey. It means letting go of the temptation to hold on to limiting thoughts and ways of being and doing, and overcoming the fears, distractions, and delusions that threaten to steer us off course or convince us that we have already arrived at our destination when we've hardly begun the journey. I'll read one more paragraph here and then shift to the very end.
Okay.
The journey into working for good is very much a hero's journey, filled with risks, challenges, allies, and transformational experiences. It takes tenacity, persistence, perseverance, resilience, optimism, faith, keen awareness, and powerful tools to fulfill our purpose. And even upon our return, we continue to face adversity, obstacles, naysayers, and challenges, both internal and external. So I'll go to the very end here, if I may, and I'll just read a brief paragraph and then one final quotation. So, actually, no, there's one other I'm going to read here. So the more I practice the skills of working for good while carrying the intention to serve through my work, the more I relate to an insight by Mother Teresa. I never look at the masses as my responsibility. I look at the individual. I can only love one person at a time, just one. So you begin. I began. I picked up one person. Maybe if I didn't pick up that one person, I wouldn't have picked up 42,000. The same goes for you. The same thing in your family. The same thing in your church, your community. Just begin. One. Working for good is essentially about how we show up for one person at a time. And for each person we encounter, there is no saving the world, but there is co-creating it with one another. To do that, we have to truly be with one another.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jeff. That was a very moving section.
Yeah.
That was Jeff Klein reading from his book, Working for Good, which is available at soundstrue.com, I believe.
.com, workingforgood.com, and most places where books are sold online.
And it can be ordered from your local bookstore.
That's right, absolutely.
If it's not there already, which it might be.
Is it print on demand, or is it...
No, they have... it's available in warehouses and all that.
Okay.
Great.
You know, that's another thing that's revolutionized the published industry, this print on demand thing.
Well, there were a couple, as you were reading, there were a couple things that I thought about. And one was, when you're talking about Joseph Campbell's The Hero's Journey, that, you know, we talked earlier about how when the time is right, things become easy. But there's a flip side of that, which is that you have to persevere through when it's not the time yet, but you still have to persevere. And especially here in Fairfield, there's a concept that's very popular about supportive nature, that if you're doing the right thing, you'll have the support of nature. And I have witnessed people, or have observed what I believe is that people think that if they run into any obstacle, then they're not getting support of nature, so they must be doing the wrong thing.
And no, so they
really not. No, because you have to give nature time to support you.
Yes. You have to let nature know that you're part of nature, and part of nature, you know, there's energy moving in nature. Nature isn't stagnant.
Right.
Movement. And
right.
If you're not moving, you know, you're dead. Right.
And people are moving around, and people are doing, you know, all sorts of things.
So sometimes I see people sort of get in this trap of they try something out, it doesn't quite work, so they switch and do something completely different, and they run into an obstacle, and so then they switch and do something else completely different. And you actually need to sometimes to push through.
Yeah, you know, do I have time to read one other quotation?
Yes.
Or are we
yes.
Time?
No, we're fine.
We're fine.
So you know that you may have heard this one from Goethe, right, on commitment. And this directly pertains to what you've just said. Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment one definitively commits oneself, then providence moves too.
Mm.
A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents, meetings, and material assistance, which no man could have dreamt would have come his way. Whatever you can do or dream you can, begin it. There's genius, power, and magic in it. Begin it now. And the thing I want to say is, and to your point, which was a really good point, trying something is different from committing, right?
Yes.
And commitment is not something you make once and it's done. You have to reaffirm your commitment. You have to deepen your commitment as you lean in to those challenges, and they want to say, I'm going to see if you're really committed here, right? That's all they're doing. Are you really committed? You know, if you blow over and do something else, we're not going to line up on you. You're not really committed to this. You've got to absolutely commit to your core bones, no matter how scared you are, no matter, you know, doesn't mean be an idiot and, you know, do stupid things. You got to learn and adapt and modify, but commit to the core, and that's when nature shows up.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Patient.
Patience.
Absolutely.
Patience.
And you don't know that, you know, an oak tree takes decades, right, to reach its full height.
Right.
It takes 9 months. You don't know with a business or a project, you don't know whether it's 9 months, 40 years, or somewhere in between, right?
And sometimes if you did know, you wouldn't do it.
This is true.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I never, when I was, you know, raising my kids, I never thought about being on the radio, you know. And then we moved here.
Everything.
The kids were in school, and so.
Everything works out.
Yeah.
Now, Jeff, I noticed that, you know, you mentioned John Mackey several times. You work with him in these nonprofit organizations. He also has a quote on the front of your book. Jeff Klein provides insights on how to uncover one's best self and help co-create businesses where everyone flourishes. How did you get associated with John?
Well, I had met his. I was producing a program for Peace Cereal, which is a brand of Golden Temple of Oregon called Celebrate Peace. And through that, I was introduced to Michael Strong, who co-founded FLO, this organization dedicated to liberating the entrepreneurial spirit for good, which is now morphed into Conscious Capitalism, Inc. And Michael invited me to a retreat at John's Ranch 4.5 years ago. And out of that retreat, they asked me if I would build the organization.
Wow.
And so that's how we met.
Well, I must say, Jeff, I'm very inspired because you seem to be living what you are speaking. And
walking the walk, not just talking the talk.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And it's very inspiring.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And you're enjoying what you're doing. You can tell.
Oh, my goodness. You better believe it.
Yeah. See, that's
it has to be joy. You know, part of this is all about, you know, I've been involved with, you know, organizations where the mission is so important and, you know, we've got to save the world and people are treated like garbage in the process and everybody's dour and, you know, burned out. And that's not a better world, you know, sorry.
No.
If we're not flourishing as human beings in the process and if we're not cultivating that, then there's something wrong. So, and I've been there myself, you know, but I realized if we're talking about creating a world that really serves, you know, life, then we've got to celebrate life in the process. So, and you women certainly get that.
Well, we have just a minute or two left. Do you have any final words of advice for somebody who wants to make a difference while making a living?
Well, first of all, I want to make sure to thank both of you. Really, really fun and delightful to talk with you. And thanks for having your program. And have fun with Robin and tell her I said hi, even though I'll talk to her.
And she is next week. I checked. She's our guest
That's awesome. Yes. And so the three things I would say is, first of all, is take care of yourself. Right? Really, take care of yourself. I mean, it starts with yourself, you know, as they say, you know, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help others.
Okay.
You know, don't be a narcissist, but take care of yourself. You know, you got to flourish. Secondly is commit, and we talked about that a moment ago. You know, stand for something and really go for it, regardless of how scary it is. Commit, and magic does happen, I promise. And third, surround yourself with good people, and that is people who will support you, will be honest with you, who will nurture you when you need nurturing, who will kick your butt when you need butt kicking, you know.
and that happens.
You know, they're there, committed to supporting you on your journey.
And if you're lucky, you get born into a family that does that for you like I did, but... If not, you find it elsewhere. Well, thank you. We're completely out of time. But
I wanted to hear my quote,
though. Okay, yes. We will close, as we always do, with a quote from Caroline.
Okay. In business, as in life, be as friendly and respectful to the janitor as you are to the chairman of the board.
And see you next week on Writer's Voices, when our guest is Robin O'Brien with The Unhealthy Truth. And stay tuned now on Friday for James Moore, Planet Earth's Wild. He's talking today with David Hertzfeld about jazz music at the Village Vanguard in New York City at 2:15, and he has a segment with State Senator Becky Schmitz. And at 4:30, Steve Briggs talking about his upcoming benefit book signing at the Public Library to aid the Quiet Zone Project here in Fairfield. And that's it for us today.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, and Shemaine Montana. Archives available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.